We must expose the agenda of the ideologues and persuade those interested in the cost-benefit ratio. For the latter, we must day in, day out articulate the reality. The pain is large and the gain largely illusory. But the ideologues are the ones driving this bus.
Hello and welcome to episode 70 of the Right Dishonourable podcast.
Nice round number.
It is a nice round number. Yeah. I'm one of your hosts, Jimmy, and I'm joined as ever by the lovely Jazza John. Jazza, how are you?
Lovely. Good. Brilliant.
We are joined by two other guests from the DAS podcast, is what you call it, right?
That is what we call it and what our listeners call it too.
as it is spelled DAS, that is the traditional way.
I thought initially that it was the DAS podcast and it stood for something.
Does Dangerous and Sexy.
Dungarees and Sass.
We've got lots of things.
Daughters and Sons.
We actually started it because we wanted something that we liked to gender neutral things, and we were talking about how the world is all gender neutral. And there's no like words in the English language that are like that, but DAS is obviously the German
the
gender neutral kind of.
That's quite clever.
Yeah. We are DAS.
Cool. DAS. Would you like to introduce yourselves and also introduce the podcast that you guys have as well?
Yeah, so I'm Ruby.
And I'm Charlie.
We don't rehearse that. And we have a podcast that comes out once a month, like your period, and it is called DAS Podcast.
Only more annoying. And we're both on our periods today.
Yeah.
Yay! We met up before doing this, and I like immediately came on my periods.
So. And I was on my phone this morning. Yeah. If you look really into my eyes, you start your period.
God, I won't be looking at you directly. As ever, we discuss three topics that have been significant in the world of politics, news, and social events, don't we, Jimmy?
Those three things change each week.
They do, and the order changes, and I'm never quite sure how to describe them. But Tony Blair came out this week.
Let's go.
Yeah. Oh,
Turn
I wish.
Tony
Silver
Blair.
Fox. So he is telling people who voted to remain to rise up and to... Is he trying to stop Brexit happening?
Yeah, cool. He said explicitly that he wanted to stop Brexit happening.
Excellent, good. Well, I'm all in for that. And Jimmy can get chastised by the rest of us as we...
Against the will of the people.
Yes.
Are you happy for...
Yes. Yes, so happy for democracy to be reversed. I'm totally fine with that.
You said previously that you've reconciled yourself with Brexit, though.
No, I didn't. I said that... I've always said this, Jimmy, and I'm hurt that you didn't remember, that my ideal scenario is Brexit not happening. But then my next choice if Brexit has to happen is a hard Brexit.
Okay.
I'm glad we've cleared that.
A hard Brexit.
Yes.
Right, so someone just explain what the hard Brexit, the soft Brexit is.
So the hard Brexit is that we leave the single market and the jurisdiction of the European courts and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we don't do the Norway option, as it's sometimes referred to.
Mm-hmm.
The soft Brexit is the Norway option, so we remain part of some EU institution.
We still have to pay like a membership fee, but won't have as much say in what policies get passed in the European Parliament, because we're not sending representatives anymore.
Right.
Yeah, and what does this mean for immigration? Is the free movement of people in the hard Brexit line, we stop the free movement of people, and a soft Brexit is keep
that's the gist of it, yeah. So that's
but spoiler, we're still going to have quite a lot of immigration because we're fucking up the economy.
Yeah. And we need immigration to save our NHS, which is on its knees, according to the Sun and the Daily Mail.
I feel we should outline the other two topics before we go
Brexit
proper.
You ladies suggested talking about some words that Diane Abbott said this week. Do you
just some words that Diane Abbott said.
Yeah. I mean, she wrote them actually, didn't she?
Yeah.
She
wrote a personal column for The Guardian about the online abuse and bullying she gets on a daily basis, and had a kind of a perfect storm week. Oh my god!
That's my phone.
Is Diane okay? Has something else happened?
Sorry, I'll turn that off.
That is terribly unprofessional of you, Jazza.
Should we just turn our phones off? I have the sat nav on the way here. Mike keeps saying we've arrived. I'll leave it on that.
You have arrived at your destination. You have arrived at your destination.
You were saying that Diane Abbott has been receiving daily racist and sexist abuse. And
So she's Britain's first black female MP. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. And that only happened recently, which is fucking diabolical. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she wrote an opinion piece in The Guardian basically saying that she's come against misogyny and sexism every battle through her entire career of being a really well-established Labour MP. And we were discussing how you can say what you like about her, but she has had a phenomenal, interesting life. Mm. And
her battle that she was fighting to get elected, she's still fighting now, and I think that's the gist of it.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And these
winning! Ladies.
The third topic then, Jazza, since you're the resident YouTuber. Huh?
I am the resident YouTuber, so our benevolent overlord, PewDiePie, who is the most subscribed channel on YouTube, including youtube.com/YouTube,
Who subscribes to YouTube.com?
They allegedly force subscribe quite a lot of people onto the YouTube.
There's diabolical
and
people.
Also the front page of YouTube is where you can go to find stuff that they rate and think is good, so it's quite a good one to
isn't
follow.
Isn't it a separate channel though, the YouTube channel?
Oh.
Yeah, it's like a separate channel.
I don't know anything about YouTube.
But PewDiePie has over 50 million subscribers. He
15
is... Yeah, 50
wow.
million.
He made $15 million
last year.
So Forbes have estimated his net worth at 15 million, okay. Which is probably... generous, don't know, who knows. But he's incredibly prolific in the world of entertainment as the most subscribed person on YouTube, and he does commentary over the top of gaming videos, which are sporadically entertaining. He made a video where he got some people to hold up the words "death to all Jews," and these people also happened to be in South Asia. And
it was India, right?
I wasn't sure which part of South Asia it was. But
they seemingly didn't understand they were being paid to hold up a sign that said
"death to all Jews." And he's now been dropped from the Disney-owned multi-channel network called Maker, and
YouTube have pulled the series from Scare PewDiePie.
And we all decided we hate him now, right? Am I right?
Well, we will get on to that. So basically, we're not sure how to feel about PewDiePie, and we'll talk about how we think that we're meant to feel about PewDiePie.
Okay.
But Tony Blair.
But speaking of, you know, people that are hated, Tony Blair.
I always, like, whenever I see Tony Blair, I kind of, it's like nostalgia. Like, it just reminds me of the 90s.
It's like, you know,
Love Actually is coming back.
Things will only get better.
And also, when I heard the speech, the first half of it, I started really romanticising Tony Blair. And it was really, like, really weird.
So, I agreed with absolutely everything. As a, like... a card-carrying Ramona, I loved the speech. It was everything that I wanted, and I wish that people other than Tim Fallon were actually talking about this more frequently. But the problem is that it's Tony Blair, right? Because we
and
hate
it's a
him.
Year too late.
Yeah, also, this would have been really handy before last June, really, wouldn't it? But as Jimmy, you were saying earlier that they were originally going to try and get all of the former prime ministers who were alive come out for Remain.
This was like Will Straw's campaign. Like, mm-hmm. But the idea was that they got Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, John Major and David Cameron to appear on a podium together as a united front, and they decided it was a shit idea because everyone hates the establishment now. Mm-hmm. So I suppose people have always hated the establishment, but they thought it would send the wrong message. So
why is there this idea that people hate Tony Blair? Because he is
Iraq.
The
Iraq.
Most
Iraq.
No, sure, but post Iraq he still won an election.
Yeah, he did.
He changed the Labour Party, though, so much.
Unrecognisable.
Yeah,
but
made it win 4 general elections, right?
Three general elections. Yeah.
Surely he should be seen as like somebody who is at least respected by a large portion of the population, right? Because we bloody voted for him. Why does he have a bad taste in that?
I don't agree with what he did with the Iraq War, and I don't respect his decision. I don't like him for that, but I respect his opinion, and I'm always interested to hear what he says. Mm-hmm. There we go.
So, other than Iraq, do you actually like the policy program that he pursued when he was in power?
Some of it. I think he's he brought in the free movement of people from, oh my God, I've written it down, Poland. Mm-hmm. And the Czech Republic and places that other people didn't want to come in, and I support and agree with that. He brought in loads of female MPs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that centralist, but I'm not 100% against him. Like I think a lot of people
are. I don't know if this is so much like Tony Blair, you know, who he is. It's more about what he said in this Brexit speech, though, isn't it? It's like mm-hmm. he's talking about something that the country has made a decision on. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Nigel Farage described him as yesterday's man, coming in from, like, kind of dead rock star trying to, like, revive his career.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something to be said about that. Like, it's over for you, man. Step back and shit has to happen for other people.
But then hasn't he seen that nobody else is really picking up the mantle and getting heard? Whereas if he mm-hmm. makes a speech about it, for whatever reason, everybody is still paying attention.
I mean,
attention.
We're listening. You're right, we're talking mm-hmm. about it. Absolutely.
And also, why shouldn't we listen to ex-prime ministers? I know people dislike the establishment, but I'm quite interested to hear what people with experience of running our country think now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd quite like for them to be more in public
life. But
the
Brexit vote was all about flipping the bird to all of those people who've run the country and decimated parts of the
UK. And is there
UK.
Any MP who has the experience to handle how we're going to negotiate this Brexit?
Yeah.
It's something that has literally never happened.
It's never happened. Nobody knows how to do it. Mm. And it's just a lot of people sitting around being like, right, so we've got to start this thing. Does anyone know this Article 50 thing? It just feels like there's a bunch of fucking stupid people running the country right now, and it's, mm-hmm. it's all in disarray.
I'd say that's normally the case. It's just more obvious right now.
But I feel like his speech didn't shed any more light on what Brexit will look like. I felt like there was a lot of fluff and a lot of words that made me feel quite emotional, mm-hmm. and I kept thinking, what a great speech maker, when I was listening
to
him.
Yeah, he's an amazing orator.
I still don't really know what Brexit looks like, because it was quite emotional.
But really, we're not going to know until we come out of the negotiations with the EU, after we trigger Article 50, which is going to be in like a couple of years. But I think that he was quite good in calling the bluff of the government quite a lot. We've had...
Well, he pointed out like the complete flip that a lot of Tory politicians did, like Theresa May and Philip Hammond, the Chancellor.
Mm-hmm.
They were very, very sceptical about the Leave vote, and then all of a sudden...
Theresa May wasn't very sceptical.
She was somewhat sceptical.
She was just like, how am I going to become Prime Minister after this?
Let me sit back and be quiet, and then no one will really know, and then I'll be leader.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, his point was basically correct, that there's now a whole tranche of politicians who were one way and are now the other, mm-hmm. and it doesn't really make a great deal of sense.
He used an interesting phrase called Brexit at any cost, mm-hmm. rather than like the best kind of Brexit. How do Jimmy, you're the voice of all people who voted Brexit.
I am, yes. That is my
can
job.
Can you justify Brexit at any cost, do you reckon? Damaging the economy?
The establishment went out a long way out of their way to say what the costs were, the cost that they thought would be incurred through Brexit, and people still voted to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
But were they listening to them? Or were they listening to the bus that said, we're going to have 350 million
pounds? I mean, I personally believed a lot of the economic projections that were coming out. I thought there would be some damage, and I still voted. I mean, I obviously can't say what everyone else was doing, but, I think a lot of people probably did believe it, and I think a lot of the Remain voters certainly would have believed that economic analysis. But it's impossible to say without mass polling what exactly people believed going into the vote. I know the 350 campaign is seen as significant by a lot of people, and that's probably true, but...
That's the 350 million promise to the
NHS.
To the NHS,
and that's based on the gross figure that we give to the EU on a weekly basis, but that doesn't take account of rebates and that sort of thing. Mm.
But is this just exposing to all political campaigning in the lead up to a vote that we need to really be more vigorous on people's statistics and people's claims? Because you've seen similar things happen in America with Trump. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's all kind of bullshit, and we're all voting on hope and ideas rather than statistics and finances.
That was also true when Obama was being voted in. I mean, his campaign slogan was hope. That's what gets to people.
But at least
it's more honest.
Statistics. But that's, vote for hope.
But that's representative of our times, where, like, especially for people in our kind of generation, where we've had the financial crash in 2008, we've had tuition fees go up, we've had Brexit, which has fucked the economy. We're just getting slapped around the face repeatedly again and again by older generations. And then we are going to just be like, we want something different.
Do you think it's kind of like the politics of fear rather than hope? It's like we can tell that you're scared about everything.
I don't think that that's new at all. Like there's always been fear, and there's always been like the anti-EU and the anti-immigration rhetoric, especially on the right in this country, and like it has also existed on the left. But I think that like this particularly, because there are such huge consequences, is why we are talking about, oh, did people actually know what they were voting for? Like, do people ever actually know what they were voting what they're voting for in like a general election or in the European Parliament? It'd be nice if people actually turned out to those ones. There was also an interesting thing that Blair said where he kind of called Theresa May's bluff. Famously, when she won the election to become the Prime Minister, she talked about how capitalism was failing.
Yeah, like a fairer capitalism for everyone is needed.
Yeah, that was crazy, considering all of her politics, her husband, and everything else about her.
What is it about her husband?
All of his dodgy dealings.
Oh.
What are his dodgy dealings?
Her husband, doesn't he... I don't know the facts. But he doesn't pay tax properly. He's like really dodgy and no one's investigating him. This probably isn't, shouldn't be in it.
I don't know enough about it to back up what I'm trying to say.
But he was saying that despite the fact that Theresa May had said that she was going to move towards a more compassionate conservatism, that leaving the EU and then becoming a deregulated economy that could potentially become like a tax haven, which is an option for a post-Brexit United Kingdom.
That's like Singapore on Thames.
Singapore on Thames. That's depressing.
She's been all over the place with her policy pronouncements, and it's really not clear what she actually stands for at this instance, because the rhetoric just doesn't match anything, really, and the rhetoric has actually been so varied in the first place.
I feel like she's not very public with her... I don't know what her voice sounds like. Is that a silly thing to say? I don't really know what she thinks about much. When she makes a speech, it's all quite...
We've talked about this on the podcast before.
She's not very public, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, she's not like on the fly. It's like when Cameron does the turn, doesn't he? When the journalist asks him a question, he's got a special turn he does.
And that's all I have to say about it.
Yeah.
And then he she's
just
rotates
not there.
His shoulders.
She just isn't.
But I think that's kind of interesting. I like that she's a bit mysterious. And I kind of.
Oh, really?
Maybe I kind of like that.
That's what you want in like a boyfriend or girlfriend. Prime Minister. Not so much.
Being wooed by Theresa.
Yeah. I quite like how she does, despite a lot of the stuff that she does say contradicting herself, she does come across as really competent. I will say that. And she does seem on top of things. She's just doing all of the things that I don't want to happen.
No, but her tenure at the Home Office, the flagship policy was reduce migration numbers. Migration numbers went up. Yeah. I don't understand how this woman has a reputation for competency.
Yeah, people always call her a safe pair of hands. But it's just an image thing.
Back to Tony Blair's speech. What do you think, his goal is? Obviously, he wants to try and stop Brexit from happening at all costs.
But his goal is the institution he's setting up that he mentioned in the final part of his speech.
The institute is...
That's his goal.
But that is to promote or to stop Brexit. That's the point of the institute.
Yeah, so he wants to... if we don't Brexit, will the institute just fold? Or is this his next career path? Because when I was reading the speech, in my head I was thinking, who's paying him to say this? Who's he working for? And that's all I was thinking all the way through. Then on the final page he starts talking about the institute, and I understand that he's saying it's for Brexit, and we had a bloody lovely speech on the lead up to him announcing the institute, but is this not the next stage of his career?
I think he's sincere in his opposition to Brexit, I think even though he was a bit of a shyster about a lot of policy areas, being pro-European and also being pro the Iraq War, those were not areas that you could say that about him. He does have some principles. And so he was famous for just being the classic politician that will tell you exactly what you want to hear. And there's some fairness in that criticism of him. I'm just saying... He is definitely pro-European, and this is something that...
I think he is too. I wasn't saying he wasn't. I'm just saying that little bit at the end, I kind of thought...
He has legitimately had tons of dodgy dealings, though, with the Kazakhstani government and sort of thing.
So, I remember when we first had... when the EU first had, like, a president, and they were still trying to figure out what a president was going to look like. If it was going to be, like full balls to the wall American president representing the European Union, there would... lots of whispers of Tony Blair going for the job, and then he realised that it was the traditional form of the word president, where he'd just preside over proceedings, and he was like, nah, you're right. And I think that there is a certain amount of Tony Blair wants to help Tony Blair, but I would agree with Jimmy. I think that he really does want to stop Brexit happening, because he's been an architect of the EU.
Because I just don't believe he'll be able to.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, well, if you can't... Personally, I think if you can't stop Brexit, be part of the solution to make sure these negotiations are what we want and we're getting a good solution for ourselves. I think being so anti it, like, I voted to remain, and I don't, and like, for many different reasons, but I think now it's happened, I believe in democracy enough to be like, okay, we've got to just work together to make it good.
Right? Yeah.
But Ruby, what if not leaving was on the table? Would you take it? Because I'd snatch that as quick as anything.
I wouldn't take it, because we've had a vote, and if we don't uphold that vote, our democracy.
I feel like that's my London liberal head being like, fuck you, the rest of England, and I'm not that guy.
I'm happy to be that guy. What do you think about the possibility of there being a second referendum on the terms of Brexit? Because
I'd love that. It'd be interesting.
To be honest, it'd be good to have a referendum.
It's just the most exciting thing.
Yeah, I'm just like, 2017, not planning on having any votes, guys.
Yeah, we like vote every year now, right? On a couple of occasions.
I think it's good if people are engaged in politics and like knowing this. Like, so maybe people were uninformed before we went into this European referendum, and that's like whatever. But people were discussing it. There was just a bit more fight and bite in conversations, and I enjoyed that.
One of the things that he said also in his speech was the fact that we live in a world now that is dominated by large blocs like the United States, China, the EU, India, Brazil, really large dominant countries. That is a very different dynamic to what existed before the UK joined the European Union, as it is now. And he was saying that the chances of the UK being able to dominate in that space, now that we don't have strong links to empire and Commonwealth and all of that kind of stuff, that it's actually going to be quite difficult for the UK to be able to, as it traditionally has, quote-unquote, punch above its weight. Do you think that the UK can actually manage to, like, still be a great, powerful
superpower
nation?
I don't think it can, but does it need
to
be...
Are we being unpatriotic by saying that?
Well, I think my favourite bit of Blair's speech is when he said how hideously the matter of patriotism has been abused with Brexit. And I think that's really true, and I think patriotism doesn't mean we have to like be a superpower and we have to be really fucking rich. I think we have to look after each other and be more socialist. So it could lead us to being a nicer country, even if it doesn't lead us to being a richer country.
You're in Denmark. Have a good Denmark.
Denmark are quite rich, though, aren't they?
Denmark are a brilliantly loaded country, like all the Scandinavian countries.
Brilliantly loaded.
be a Denmark or a Sweden.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm okay with that.
Mm.
I don't know, I think inherent to patriotism is actually my country first. I mean, that's, you know, that's why...
Is that what it is? Is it my country first? Because I don't want to be patriotic.
I thought
it
was
like
just different
liking your country
of...
and being like, yeah, I'm proud.
Yeah, being proud of this is what...
But in political terms, I think it has to mean... You know, that you put your country first. Otherwise, it's indistinguishable from internationalism, isn't it? Which is what Tony Blair actually stands for.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't buy his line on that. I just don't think it makes any coherent sense.
I'd love to round this topic up with a really hypothetical question. If Tony Blair were to somehow seize the reins of the Labour Party from Corbyn, would you vote for a Tony Blair Labour Party again in 2020?
Ooh, wow.
I actually think there needs to be a proper neoliberal party again, because it used to be that the Ed Miliband and David Cameron's Labour and Tory parties were very, very similar neoliberal parties, broadly speaking. And in the course of like a year or so, we've lost both of those parties, and it's been replaced with Theresa May's Conservatives, although it's not entirely clear what she stands for. She's a social conservative. She wants more protectionism in the economy, at least ostensibly speaking. And then we've got Jeremy Corbyn on the other side, who, similar on the economy, different on social issues, but there is no there's no Blairite party anymore. So we've gone from having two Blairite parties to no Blairite parties.
I mean, there's kind of the Lib Dems.
The destruction of the Lib Dems, though. I feel quite sad for Nick Clegg that this Brexit vote didn't happen whilst he was in his prime, because he would have been all over this. I saw him speak on it a few times in lead up, and I was just like, if only people were still listening to you, because you're really good, you're really charismatic, and you're just a nice guy.
Cleggy's bae.
He is total bae.
Yeah.
There are rumours he'll come back at some point. But
what, to
I
lead?
Would, I would,
yeah, to lead the Lib Dems, yeah.
I don't think I would vote for the neoliberal if the new Tony.
I'm not saying that you'd like it would be suitable for anyone at this table. Even I'm just saying that there should be space for a party like that in British politics because there's a lot of people that do support those policies.
Just another voice as well.
Yeah.
I think we're quite anti bullshit, and the Tony Blair neoliberalism is kind of filtered with all that wooing and bullshit and like lovely language that's going to make you follow him anywhere. And I think the general public are now want no bullshit politics, and unfortunately that's led to Trump and lots of right-wing uprisings, but also it's led to Socialist Labour and the Green Party and other, you know, the rise of the SNP as
well. But they're not going to continue to be cut at the ankles because of the terrible voting system that we have. I will always talk about how terrible the voting system we have is. Anyway,
let's
do you like the voting system?
No, I also dislike the voting system.
Did you make up the voting system?
It's all Jimmy's. It's all Jimmy's.
He always addresses me personally about the first past the post system, and I also oppose it, so yeah. I don't know what that's all about.
So, Charlie, you wanted to talk about Diane Abbott and her the words that she had about being an ethnic minority MP and a lady and the abuse that she's getting, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this week...
Tell us more.
So this week, Diane Abbott wrote her article for The Guardian about all the misogyny and racism she kind of has on a daily basis. And I remember seeing this article, I mean, like, oh yeah. Because if you're a feminist and a woman and you speak up about anything, you're going to get online abuse. From experience and from seeing it happen to my peers and people I admire and respect. So I saw this and then I thought to myself, actually, I need to pay this article much more attention. And that's why I want to talk about it, because it is really important. And this isn't the first time an MP has spoken out about getting rape threats, death threats, and shitloads of trolling.
So Stella Creasy is another one that's talked about it quite a lot.
Yeah.
I think the story is like particularly important for us because of DAS, the podcast that we run, and we talk about feminism every week, and we're both women who have worked in current affairs programming and television, and you know, we both have thought about careers in politics and thought about whether that would be an option, and there's lots of different reasons that scare us, and Diane Abbott writes very succinctly about why the current toxic environment for women online, women in politics, is not going to encourage any more women to enter.
And so Diane said, "I receive racist and sexist abuse online on a daily basis. I've had rape threats, death threats, and I'm referred to routinely as a bitch and or N-word." I'm not going to say that word. "And I'm sent horrible images on Twitter. The death threats include an EDL-affiliated account with the tag 'Burn Diane Abbott.'" And that's just like a tiny taste of all the shit that she has to deal with.
So I will say that this is definitely not something that is restricted to politicians online. If you are a woman, or if you're queer, or if you're a person of colour, then you are going to have... And you have an opinion online, then you're going to have pushback on it. There's loads of research that shows that people who show opinions online are more likely to get abuse if they are either queer, a person of colour.
There's research that disagrees with that, though. I mean, there's some reports that suggest men get more of the abuse, or just as much abuse.
I think it's a certain type of abuse, if we're talking like it's particularly about being a woman. Obviously, Diane receives a lot of racist abuse as well.
I think it's
the rape threats. I know no male peers that have received rape threats in the same way.
I'd agree it's tinged with sexism when women get abused, whereas with men it's more generic. Is my experience of it.
The Guardian did an article about all the comment section, because you know the whole idea of don't look at the comment section, but the people that write the comment section are people. Like, this isn't like another alternate universe where there's computers writing this. They are people writing comments. And the top 10 people that get abusive comments, 8 of them are women and the other 2 are black men. So we know sexism and racism is rife. But I think the point that she has made, and I think that is the most important thing about this, is when she sought to be elected in the 80s, she was fighting this shit. 30 years on, she is still fighting about the article
that I just think is very disingenuous. I just don't buy that the level of abuse she's getting or the level of pushback because of her race and sex is worse now than it was when she started.
Like, I think there's different elements now. Social media is... Yeah. I never got any abuse until I joined social media. Like, you get the odd person shouting at you in the street.
She was a public figure before social media was a thing. And I'm sure that the racism that she got during the 80s when she was first getting into politics was absolutely horrendous. And I just think the mode of delivery now is different. So there's an immediacy to it, which probably wasn't there initially. But I think she's maybe getting a bit distracted by the technological side of things and not looking at the broader picture that Britain is now, must surely be, a less racist country than it was in the 1980s.
I think that we should also remember that when you're online, you're kind of... If you're dealing in spaces that has trolls, then you're dealing with a space that they deem as their own. And trolls are... very kind of like males. They're more likely to be male, more likely to be white, and more likely to be culturally homogenous. But they are there.
Where's the evidence for that? Because the trollings are not anonymous.
Through ethnographies that have been done by, I can't remember the scientist's name, but she did it's the book, This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things. And the cultural norms that they kind of like try and cement on the internet tend to be those of like whiteness and misogyny. But they see this as their space, and anybody who comes in and is different to that cultural norm that they hold up is going to get some kind of abuse, because they see it as kind of an invasion of the equality that exists in their world. Because so many of them are anonymous, there's kind of a phrase of there's no women on the internet, and there's the phrase tits or get the fuck out. Unless you're going to give something that is beneficial to us about your gender or your race, then why the fuck are you here? We're all here just being like a meritocracy. Yeah, guys. And that's what that online world is based around, and that's because 4chan and Reddit are kind of like the back doors of the internet. That's where all of these people exist.
I dispute quite a lot of that. I've hung around on not 4chan so much, but Reddit an awful lot. And a lot of... there's a continuum, I suppose, between the kind of Western supremacist or white supremacist side of things, which is the bit that's got more focused in the progressive media, for sure. But then that goes all the way down to a lot of just piss-taking, basically.
No, so of course. It's seen as banter. Taking the mix.
Banter. Yeah.
Banter. Yeah, exactly.
I hate the word banter.
So I, as like a queer guy who talks about politics and has like videos of me doing it like quite prolifically online, I get like homophobic abuse all of the fucking time. As somebody who experiences something that is obviously very different to getting death threats and different to having abuse about my my race, I still find it very difficult to have a huge amount of sympathy for people who get that level of abuse online, even though I know that it's terrible, because at the end of the day, I know that it's keyboard warriors the majority of the time. I've had people who've doxxed my family, but then nothing has ever happened.
Doxxed?
So that this is when they find information, personal information, like they found my parents' address, and they said that they were... like, they just sent, like, my address to me and said, we know where you live. And I was like, ah, that's actually where my parents now live. And that's quite scary. When there's a danger of it coming into the real world, that's when I think that there should definitely be restrictions when it comes to user behaviour online. But if it's just people using words who are trying to get a reaction and they've gotten a reaction out of Diane Abbott, I think that it needs to be seen for what it is, and it largely just needs to be ignored, because it's a load of people
being massively.
It's difficult to see the difference between those two things. They often look exactly the same. Yeah, you can probably explain why you disagree far better than I can.
If you're receiving, like, there was one MP, Jess Phillips, who had 600 tweets of abuse, including rape threats and death threats, and it's really personal stuff. Like, I think some things just seem generic and random, but when somebody is saying they know where they live, they can see you, they're sending you pictures of knives, they're sending you pictures of guns, it's terrifying. And I think the frightening thing about this is that the sexism is happening inside and outside of the House of Commons. If she was living her everyday life in an environment where she wasn't one of the only women of colour in a very largely male-dominated space where she didn't have to deal with sexism every day at work, and then she got home and the tweets are coming through. Like, it must be awful. And I think Diane Abbott gets a lot of criticism from people that's undue. I don't think she's a perfect politician.
I wouldn't say all of it's undue. I mean...
I didn't say all of it. I said a lot of it.
I think a lot of it is due, because I think she is a bit of a buffoon, really. She does kind of embarrass herself in a lot of her media appearances. You can see why people dislike her beyond the racial and sexist components.
But I don't think that really is... Like, we're always going to disagree with politicians.
Yeah.
And I'm always going to take the piss out of Jeremy Corbyn, no matter. And I'm always going to take the piss out of X, Y, and Z politician, because they're politicians, and we should be allowed to do that. But when it kind of descends into, racism and misogyny and homophobia.
But as an example with Jeremy Corbyn, Jeremy Corbyn and Diane Abbott had a relationship many, many years ago.
Shh, whisper it.
And everybody likes to talk about that, and she totally bears the brunt of that. She gets the criticism about her appearance. Like, part of this... In this week, the reason she wrote this was because of the text messages by David Davis saying that he wouldn't give her a hug because he's not blind. And a lot of the abuse she gets is about the way she looks physically, and it's all about her womanhood.
A Tory councillor tweeted a picture of a ape with lipstick on and said it was her.
That's racism.
They said, get the Diane Abbott. He's been suspended, not fired, suspended. People get suspended off Twitter, or nothing's done. The amount of times I hit the report button when people are sending you shit, and you're like, "This, nothing is happening here."
So what would you do in order to stop that happening? Because I agree with all of the things that you're highlighting, but I think that allowing for a space where there is freedom of speech, where people can criticise, where people can I believe people can say what they want, but as soon as there is any like desire to stop them from saying anything, I can just ignore them. I can just say that they're wrong. How would you stop people from being abusive?
I would just end sexism. I'd just make
it illegal. I would love for that to happen.
Because it's not like, oh, we need this thing on Twitter, we need this law that ban, like, we'll have people, I mean, actually maybe we do need laws that will fire people for being sexist or misogynistic, but you saw it when Theresa May became the Prime Minister. One of the tabloids had the heel boys headline with the kitten heel on top of their heads. Like, it's everybody, and it's all the time. I just think we're in crisis. We're in a political crisis where 50% of the population is being deterred from entering a space that essentially has an impact on absolutely everybody's lives.
Isn't this kind of an insane thing to say when the Prime Minister's a woman?
That's not insane. She is one woman at the moment.
She is the most powerful person in the country. I don't really agree with you.
That's like saying there's female representation in the band No Doubt because Gwen Stefani is the lead singer. One woman. She is not equal. The point is equality. She's the main person
in that band. Like, she's the only band member that anyone knows from that
but
band.
But she's still not other women in the band. She's representing one female
one woman
voice.
That's hyper-sexualised.
That comes from a white, middle class.
Shall we try not to move into the demographics of the band, No Doubt, as much as I'd like to.
That.
I don't know if there is, like, a solution to this. It's not about there being solutions. It's about us talking about a cultural shift in the way that we think about women and think about racism and talk about it. And actually, what Diane Abbott's done in this article is to highlight that actually it's been really fucking difficult for her, and it's continually going to be so, and it will be, and we need to change that. We need to make environments, I'd hate the word safe space, but, you know, make places where we can feel like we're at the table having those conversations.
So they are at the table. Like, there's a third of MPs in the House of Commons are now women.
That's good enough for you.
No, sorry, a third increase from what it previously was. I think it was a quarter previously.
That was because of the 95 SNP,
SNP. Yeah, but 95 out of 455. There's more men sitting in the House of Commons today than there has ever been women in the last 100 years since we won the right to vote. Diane Abbott was the first, but the
general trend is towards more female representation. The thing I reject from what you said is the crisis point. I'm not disputing there are problems, and some of the problems are highlighted in that Abbott article. I'm just saying the general trend is towards more equality and representation.
I think,
right?
Talking about things like they are at crisis point is actually a very important way for movement and activism to happen. Mm. She can sit here and say, you know, actually, I do think racism is just as bad now as it was back in Britain back in the day.
But what if, that's now? Just not true?
Who gives a shit? She's highlighting something. She's
highlighting who gives a shit about the truth? Fake news.
It's not like this is the truth, this isn't the truth. This is her personal experience and we need to take it seriously.
You don't need to take someone's personal experience seriously if it's not representative of the experience.
It is representative. As I have said like several times already, people of colour, queer people and women have a much harder time
that's true in the data.
How many rape threats
I have actually been threatened with doxing before, I realised when you were talking about it. But
what about rape?
I haven't been threatened with rape. The data seems to suggest that actually men get just as much abuse online.
But the form of the abuse, I think, is important. It'd be interesting to read the study that you...
Well, that same study also suggested that men get threatened with violence online more.
Mm. So, men get threatened with violence in public life offline. Mm. Men are more likely than women to get beaten up.
To get physically assaulted, yeah.
Women are more likely to be sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. But the thing about this is a woman who's entering a space who is surrounded by very few other people like her. Mm-hmm. And she's...
Well, there's other Labour MPs. You know, that her demography is not the singular factor in her life, is it?
But I believe it's a really important contributing factor for the amount of abuse that she gets.
But she's also very prominent as a media figure, as a politician, and that's why she gets a lot of abuse as well.
We're reducing it down to be like, you actually get more abuse than you, and you actually get more abuse than me. Like, nobody should be getting fucking
abuse. Yeah.
We're just like trying to make that not happen, right?
Charlie, I wanted to ask, specifically when you were talking about us just being able to end... sexism.
Yeah,
because that would be lovely.
Let's do it.
So I obviously I agree with that. But I think that the way that you end sexism is by engaging with those people rather than stopping them from speaking. That is a hard thing to kind of pitch because it's going to take a lot longer. It's going to be incredibly labour intensive. But unless you have those educational infrastructure in place, unless you have people who are willing to engage with these cultures online that are very male and white dominated, then you're not going to be able to change those opinions. You end up pushing them underground.
Who? Emma Watson in the He for She speech. For I agree with you.
It's
true.
The thing that I worry about when it comes to online abuse is when you end up just saying that we're going to lock you in a corner cupboard over there, because the only way that we're going to be able to change things and end sexism and end homophobia and end racism is by having these really difficult conversations all of the time, and by blocking people on Twitter, that isn't what's going to happen.
And there's only really one kind of troll that we know about, is the John Nemo guy, who is the first guy that's been convicted of trolling. He was like trolling Stella Creasy and
Caroline
Perez Curio and he has been in jail twice.
I thought
now
there were two people
that
who were convicted.
Oh, maybe there was another guy as well, but just
no. There was a woman who was convicted in that case.
Yeah. So it's like, who are these people? Because we see them as demons, we see them as devils, and when you make somebody a devil, you can't talk to them about what you can't change them. You think that they
wasn't
are evil.
Wasn't there a BBC journalist who confronted a troll in real life, and he was actually just came across as really sweet and jaded?
Owen Jones interviewed one of his trolls in a Guardian video.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what you're thinking of.
No, I'm thinking of, I think it was a BBC journalist, but obviously Owen Jones has done it as well.
For me, the important thing about this topic isn't necessarily just online trolls, because I feel like what's happening online is just shining a light on what happens offline to women. Like when people talk about online abuse, like I tweeted something in support of a feminist thing, and I started getting loads of abuse through, and I was sitting with my husband and I was reading them out to him, and he was like, stop reading them out, like, you need to go to sleep, you need to know how this feels. And I was like, but these are things that people have said to me in the street, these are things that people have said to me at work, these are things that people say to me all the time. And suddenly when it's online, it's like, we've got a social media crisis, this is a social media problem. These aren't new problems. And it's, I don't know, I just, it highlights it, and we need
to... Yeah, Diane Abbott isn't a woman online, she's an MP in the parliament of our country that's supposed to represent us, and if she's getting this day to day... It's a really bad reflection on Britain.
It's like the woof in the House of Commons the other day by Nicholas. Is it Soames?
Yeah, and he had to apologise for it.
Yeah. Oh, really? He's a Winston Churchill's grandson.
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
I feel like Winston Churchill probably would have whiffed at some women too. I don't believe he was all that nice.
Do you think that Parliament itself, aside from all of the stuff that happens online, because that happens online to anybody, not just people who choose to become MPs. Do you think that there is a chance of it becoming a place that is going to be more like conducive to women wanting to become MPs? What do you think needs to change in order for that to happen? As representatives and voices of the female genre.
I think it is a lot about representation and us seeing people like us doing those roles.
Does Priti Patel make you more likely to...
But we have to be able to dislike Priti Patel. Like, we have to, like, when you say Theresa May, is she not representing you? Is that not enough? It's like, it's not, because I want Priti Patel.
Well, that seems to be your point, though, is that you want more women, and then when women turn up, they're the wrong sort of women, or they have the wrong views. So...
Well, I'll just say that because I'm not a conservative.
Well, my point is, shouldn't you be voting for people who have the same politics as you and the same objectives rather than people along demographic grounds?
Yeah, but I've told you this, Jimmy. I want to see people who are like me with the same views as me as much as possible. But
I
want
to see me in there.
Yeah. Because unless you see people who are like you, then it's really difficult to even imagine that it's a path.
You just don't aspire to do so. I want young girls in Britain to grow up and see MPs on television that I didn't see that look like them and be like, actually, I fucking do want to go into politics. That is something I want to do and be part of.
But actually seeing a female Prime Minister does make me feel like I could do it. I think we were talking about this just before we came, actually. The reason that neither of us have got directly into politics and work in television for politics is because of our personal fear of the kind of the way the media treats politicians and like the politics of personal destruction. Like, we've done stuff that we don't want everyone to know about.
I think at the end of the day, it's actually quite forgiving, right? We had Myra Black got elected for the first time in 2015, youngest MP in how many
Since
years?
Since William Pitt or something.
And people went through her old tweets, and it was her saying that she was going out and getting wankered at the age of 15 and saying that maths were pish. But I think that until we see more people who have histories online and who have made mistakes and tweeted about stupid things,
it just needs to be
normalised.
You need to own your scandal if you ever get elected. Yeah, so I did take
Anthony Weiner.
Oh my god,
he's
just
keeps doing the same thing. It has all kind of collapsed, and bless his heart.
But you know,
I feel really bad for Uma.
She's poor girl.
She's left him now, though, hasn't she?
Yeah.
You know, Laurie Penny, when she first started out
this
writing.
This is the New Statesman journalist.
Yeah. She got, people went through all the old Facebook photos trying to make her out to be a slut, trying to make, drug take. I don't know, actually, don't know. If it was drug taking, but trying to
bad,
make out
bad
she was
behaviour.
Like, yeah, basically, they tried to shame
tried to
her.
Share that she was
that.
Being naughty.
And we met a girl actually the other week that we interviewed for our podcast, Daz. Plug, called Nicola Thorpe, who started the high heels campaign. Did you hear about that?
No.
So she was asked to leave her job without pay.
I listened to this on the beauty podcast.
She's really cool. She was saying that when that came up, the petition got loads of signatures and it became a big press thing. She's doing lots of interviews, and they went back through all of her Facebook photos and found ones of her just in a bikini, for a cosplay thing as Princess Leia. They were trying to shame her with that, and it's just this thing of, I have a fear that I could never do anything like this because my kind of sexual past will come back to haunt me. Not that I feel like I've done anything wrong, but it's this idea that your life is the property of the press. And I do believe that politics should be, politicians should be held to account, but do we need to destroy them? Because with Trump, all the Trump protests I've been to recently, everyone's like, look at his hair, look at his hands. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested.
That actually helps because it normalises them. If you make fun of
him. But I always think, everyone stop making fun of the way he looks, because we're
not here.
We're taking away our argument. We want to be good people who are like, not
protesting him because he's racist, yeah. Not because he has bad hair.
Yeah.
But when people vote,
there are nice people with bad hair. Not all real people with Trump hair are bad.
When voters go to the balloting booth, though, they analyse a politician based on their physique. Actually, and there's a huge.
Did they?
Well, if you look into the research into it, the idea that somebody just looks competent, they have if they're a man, they have a strong jawline or whatever.
What
tall.
Do women need to have?
I don't know.
Pointy kitten heels.
Well, you can imagine
a large bust or a small bust. What's the
voice? You can imagine if a woman was dressed, let's say more provocatively, in a voter's mind, they might dismiss her as a bit flimsy or frivolous or whatever. Yeah. So there's probably some connection along those lines, I'd imagine. Mm, yeah. And that's never going to stop being a part of politics. You have to just accept that as a ground level psychology thing.
But I think that psychology would change with equality, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Once you become better people, we'll stop judging people on that.
But it will change way down the road. We're going to be old and fucking haggard by the time.
But we'll still be fighting for the cause.
I don't think it will ever change. I just think it's the way humans are wired. We're just wired to make dumb connections that make no sense whatsoever in logical terms. And I think you just have to assume that's going to be part of the game for forever, basically.
Have you guys heard of the glass cliff?
No.
I've had a bit
of this by any chance a variation on the glass ceiling?
Oh, you're right. Oh, yes. It's basically it's a phenomenon of women in leadership roles during periods of crisis and downturn when the chance of failure is at its highest. So it's the idea that Theresa May became Prime Minister because we're fucked. And the reason that loads of women took up leadership roles after the financial crashes, and basically the whole thing of when the cost is at its highest, women will take on that role. Mm-hmm. What do you reckon about that, guys, huh?
I mean, is this just some theory that someone's come up with, or is
it's a legitimate theory? Google it. There's loads of things.
I'm not saying it's not a theory.
I didn't make it up. Someone else made it up.
I mean, I'm just... What's the evidence that this is?
I just felt like Theresa May would never have become Prime Minister if one of the...
She's been on the cards for a while.
I've known for years.
You haven't known for years.
It's all bloody perfect. I first mentioned that I thought Theresa May was going to be Prime Minister in 2014.
Mm. Would she have got the support of the rest of the party, though? Because it felt like all the Brexiteers went, oh no. And then it was like, oh yeah, safe pair of hands, Theresa May. I don't believe she's a safe pair of hands, but other people do.
She was protected by the fact that Boris didn't run, by the fact that Gove stabbed Boris in the back, by the fact that Brexit had happened and she wasn't particularly tied to either side of the argument. That's why she won.
It was Andre Leadsom that she was up against at the end. Didn't she step down because
she
said something mean about
her
Theresa May
being a mother made her better. Yeah. And she didn't really say that, but that's how
she
the
totally
said.
She fucking said that.
No, she said, "I don't want this." I don't want this to be sound like I'm saying that I'd be a better prime minister because I'm a mum, and then proceeded to list all the reasons that she'd be a better prime minister.
No, she out and out said it. It's not an inferential thing. Yeah. She basically said, "I don't want to say Theresa May's a cunt, but Theresa May's a cunt." Absolutely, what she said.
When we did a show with Nick Clegg, and a young girl put her hand up and was just like, "How am I? I want to be a politician, but there's no one like me being politicians. What can I do?" And he was basically like, "Well, one thing I will say to you is we're here to represent you, not to be like you. Mm. So don't distrust us. Don't distrust me because I'm a white middle class man."
Yeah, for me that's not good enough.
I don't think that's good enough. Okay.
I love Clegg.
That'd be great. Okay,
love a bit of Clegg, but it's fine. Mm. And to a certain extent, you're always going to be representing people who don't look like you and don't have the same background as you. Like that's the nature of representative democracy,
especially in somewhere like London. I mean, it's possible if you live in the Shires and everyone's white and Anglican that you could get a representative.
I have a female MP in her 60s as my representative. I don't.
Who's yours here?
Lynn Brown.
Don't know.
Labour, right?
Yeah, she's a bit. She voted against Article 50 bill, but she's a bit wet.
Mm. I'm Meg Hillier.
Oh, I was Meg Hillier until very recently. Mm. Anyway, constituency chat.
I'm actually Diane Abbott,
So this topic has fallen
apart. We're all North London.
We've gone crazy ways, so I feel we should turn it clunkily to PewDiePie.
Yeah. I feel like we've
in some
just...
fashion.
Yeah.
So, PewDiePie, the most subscribed person on the internet. Oh, on YouTube.
On YouTube.
He has been dropped from Maker Studios, the multi-channel network that's owned by Disney. He's been widely chastised in the media. We're all meant to hate him, and he's evil now. And he's also been removed from Google's preferential ad placement ad placement program, which doesn't mean that he's not going to be earning money off of the ads that appear on his videos anymore, but it is going to mean that he's not going to have a premium, and he's probably going to take a cut in his income. Probably doesn't care, because Forbes see him as somebody who has a net worth of 15 million. Think he's going to
He's all right for the rest of his
life. Yeah, I think
he's no longer the golden boy of YouTube.
He was never the golden boy of YouTube. He was a guy who swore over him playing Goat Simulator. Like, YouTube, I think, have always kind of had a bit of an issue with the fact that PewDiePie is the most subscribed person, because he's not what they want people to think YouTube is. Which is why, actually, I think this is quite an easy thing for them to do.
Do you think they were waiting for him to slip up?
I think they've always been vigilant. We should probably say what he did to slip up.
Right.
So he was playing around with a website called Fiverr.com, where you can pay people a fiver in order to
do tasks.
Basically,
it's like
anything.
Crowdsourcing.
Yeah. So in his video, he got Jesus to say, "Please subscribe to XXX channel."
Not actual Jesus.
No, but somebody who looked like Jesus. He also tried to get somebody to play like a mobile game with him. And then one of the things, which like is a really ridiculous thing to do, he paid $5 for a couple of guys in a jungle in India to do this very surreal video where they laugh at each other for a little bit and then unroll a piece of parchment with a message of anything that is 5 words long. He chose, not thinking that it would happen, "Death to all Jews," and now we have to hate him. So what do you
Why didn't he ask
think?
Them, if he's just trying to be controversial, why didn't he just say, "I eat my own shit"? Why didn't he just get them to say that? Why did he have to say Jews?
Because it was something... So I see this as an example of, like, hyper-context collapse, where...
Can you explain that term?
I'm a social scientist now, I know things. So context collapse happens when you're in a space where the people who are you're interacting with are in on the joke and understand the context of where it's coming from.
Yeah.
The context here is not that PewDiePie wants Jewish people to die. It's not that he's anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
It's that he is doing something outrageous and ridiculous and showcasing a really unusual corner of the internet. If you take that out of the context of his subscriber base, of people who are in on his joke and understand his humour, it looks like he's a Nazi.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, in order for me to get more information on this article, I googled PewDiePie Nazi, and there's lots of articles saying that he's a Nazi.
I mean, the actual Nazi website, is it the Daily Stormer, which is based on the Nazi.
They're now saying they're his number one fan site, right?
Yeah, that was the joke. They've actually kind of taken
it
up.
I mean, that's to get clicks, isn't it?
Yeah.
Clickbait.
So, Pewds is going to be fine. But and this is clearly really bad taste, but this is a joke, and this is his humour, and this is something that clearly isn't anti-Semitic in what he's actually done.
I think your context theory is interesting, and he has a subscriber base. They know him. This is part of his character. This is to be expected from PewDiePie. It's totally fine, but actually he's on the wider context of the internet in an online space, you know, where lots of people can access him and loads of people are now talking about him. And I don't know, like, death to all Jews, it's like fucking scary
shit. I think
he's
a fool. Like, an absolute fool who doesn't understand the power of his... his followership, what is it? His following and his status and who he is. He doesn't understand it, and he's a bloody idiot. I don't think he's a Nazi, but I think he's an idiot. And I think we should call him Felix, because it's like Voldemort, name of fear of the name.
Felix
Kjellberg. His name is Felix. He's just a normal guy who's really silly.
He's not normal. He's got 50 million subscribers on YouTube. There's nothing normal
He's just a guy.
See, I think in the context of his channel, I mean, this is the point Ruby just made, but... in the context of his channel, it isn't out of context. It's not meant to turn people into Nazis. And I assume that most of his audience, when they watched that video, took it for what it was.
It was a shock, And he was also equally shocked because, as I said, he verbally says, "I did not expect them to do this. I thought it was going to get rejected." And a load of the other things that he submitted for Fiverr did get rejected because he asked somebody to, like, code a penis.
And like, as an example.
I mean, he did right. this apology video where he admitted he went too far. And probably what he should have mm-hmm. done is, oh, that Nazi thing, actually, that Jew thing went through. Mm. I'm not going to post that on the internet. Yeah. But he obviously decided to do the opposite of that, which is dubious. But it does, I mean, I'm kind of with Jasmine on this. I think it's just people taking this out of its proper context.
What I thought was interesting with his, the video I watched was called My Response. Mm-hmm. Mm. And he, I don't know if it's the same one you watched.
It's the same one I watched, yeah.
And I saw a very human side of him that I hadn't seen before. It was very interesting.
He seemed quite a likeable guy in that video, I thought.
I hate him normally. I think he's really annoying. I'm always like, why do people do, why do people watch this? And he was saying, which I think the first part he was saying, people only care about how much money I make. The whole time I've been the highest subscribed person on YouTube, all people want to report on is how much money I make. They don't care about anything else.
It's a very frustrating thing in the YouTube community when mainstream media obsess about how much money YouTubers make. Where, in what other context do you go up to like an actor and say, so how much money are you making on this film?
There's a lot of news articles which obsess about the amount of money that any person in entertainment
makes.
How often does that happen face to face when somebody's being interviewed?
I think this was actually the most ignorant part of Felix's video, is that he just failed to understand that if you're a news outlet, you have particular interests and you have a particular audience, and that's who you're trying to serve. You're not trying to serve the interests of whoever it is you're interviewing. And so, it's rational for the Wall Street Journal to care that YouTubers are making money. It's a business podcast.
Of course, but why does it matter in this context? The amount of money he makes.
It matters when the Wall Street Journal's writing about him in their own title. Like, it's dumb of him to complain about that sort of shit. I agree with the rest of his video was fine, but that was just stupid.
The thing that I thought was interesting about that was, I then thought, what do other YouTubers get criticism for? And I thought the only examples that I can find of other YouTubers getting criticism is the female YouTubers, people like Zoella taking a picture and a bit of her pants are in it. Or like,
we covered that.
I started the hashtag in response to that. Yeah. Thank you very much.
What are the morals of her shopping hauls? What are the morals of all the things she's doing and all the things she's saying? And I think it's sexist because women are held completely accountable for everything all the time, whereas this dude has basically got away quite scot-free for doing loads of crazy shit.
He's been dropped from Disney.
Yeah, not now. Until now. The point I'm making is until now. All people cared about was how much money he made.
No, man. Like KSI, who is another like gamer and prankster in the UK. One of the biggest channels, not far behind Zoella, went around E3 one year and motorboated a load of women, non-consensually in some cases. He got dropped from his sponsorship of Xbox, and it's really difficult for him to now get sponsorship for certain brands that see themselves.
You also have the Sam Pepper thing as well.
And there's also Sam Pepper went around pinching women's asses, and he was hounded off
the
internet.
Have I seen people though?
Yeah.
You get done for that. What I'm saying is Zoella gets criticised for much more trivial things,
but saying that there aren't consequences for people on the internet.
Oh no, I wasn't saying that.
Okay, good.
I'm
glad we can be friends again. It's fine.
I just think that he hasn't been held accountable to much. PewDiePie, personally.
But then I don't think he should be.
Well, I'm not saying he has to be. I'm not saying he has to be or he needs to be. I'm just saying that women often are much more than men.
I mean, the thing
I'm
is
just
that
being
that
a feminist over here.
The sort of people who the sort
you know
of
with an agenda.
The sort of people who read those like shopping stories about Zoella are women. So that's not like an anti. That's not a male sexist thing. That's a woman's female sexist thing almost.
Yeah, but sexism.
But they read them all right.
Who read them?
They're on like national newspapers.
Yeah, well, national newspapers will produce content that people want to read.
Yeah, but
I don't think the BBC covered Zoella in her pants, did they?
No, well, I don't know exactly where each article's come from, but I wouldn't say when I've read those, I'm like, I'm in the female section of the newspaper now. Only women will see
but
this.
But that's a wider problem with like gender in the way that gender is portrayed and reported in the news in general, the sidebar of shame on the Daily Mail.
Yeah. And the she-male. Is it she-male or female?
The
Daily Mail. Yeah.
God, the she-male.
So is
I was like,
more excited.
No, that's not okay. Like, we're not allowed to use that anymore. when it comes to if you want, we can call him Felix. When it comes to Felix, though, I think that
it's a bit weird we're referring to him by his first name, even though his surname is unpronounceable.
Kjellberg.
It's not pronounced Kjellberg. That way. No, it's Schellberg.
Oh, is it?
He actually says it. He says it at the start, at the start of the video in his response.
Well, Swedish needs to be more phonetic. The thing that made me feel most uncomfortable about that was not the anti-Semitism, but it was like one of the richest men on the internet paying people in India to do a ridiculous thing for him.
Yes,
that was a thing that made me feel really uncomfortable.
It's a consensual transaction.
No, it is a consensual transaction.
And it's not prostitution we're talking about here. Nobody was being forced into this in one way or the other.
Prostitutes often and sometimes will go into the profession consensually.
Yes, that's
actually,
Jim.
Yeah,
it's the humiliation of people based on their... They're saying that they want to be humiliated, but it's the humiliation of people doing something ridiculous.
You volunteered
for pennies. What is the $5? No, like
$5 is probably more money in India.
Big time. But it's kind of like that disparity of power was something that made me really a lot more uncomfortable than the sign that they actually held up.
Really?
Yeah.
More uncomfortable than the sign.
Itself. Yeah, and the fact that they decided to use, to actually post the sign where loads of other people who were asked to do ridiculous things by PewDiePie decided to reject it.
He should have made it plain, what he was saying was bad. I think they released a statement afterwards. They didn't really understand what it was they were doing. So that part of it is bad. But the actual fact that, you know, you're paying someone to do something like that, that doesn't seem to me to be a problem. If both sides agree.
Well, he said it was an experiment in crowdsourcing, right? To see what you could get people to do. And obviously he's an idiot, so it was something funny and silly. And there is something kind of interesting about him doing an experiment online like that, just to see.
Oh, yeah.
And to exploit some of these kind of websites that, you know, are shifting the powers in different ways.
But, you can pay for a lot of things that aren't ethical. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not just
especially
because...
on the internet.
Just because you've paid for something.
It's great. Have you got a cooking lady?
So it just doesn't mean the morality of what he did isn't justified because he's paid money for it and the money's exchanged hands. I could shit on the floor, call a cleaner, and give them money for cleaning. Doesn't make me a good person.
It is my flat. Please don't shit.
If I pay a cleaner and contractually I've paid them and then it's back to its normal state, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
But I think the anti-Semitism thing is... something I didn't think I'd be thinking about talking about this week. For me, it seems quite archaic. But then reading more into it and about the...
Oh, but then Russia Today run stories on how one of the presidential candidates in France is being supported by a gay Jew group. Anti-Semitism is still rife. But I don't think that this is an example of anti-Semitism. It's an example of a really bad joke.
Mm.
And hypercontext collapse. Mm. I'll write an essay about it later.
I think when you start thinking about it, you can find it in many more places. And then the whole thing of calling people a Nazi and the left wing always calling people a Nazi and having this dialogue is really common.
I mean, there's a problem with anti-Semitism in the left wing of the Labour Party as well, especially when it comes to Israel and Palestine and that sphere, right? It worries me that we're kind of... Well, history is repeating itself in a lot of different ways, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why you're looking at me like that.
Give us some
expecting you to say, no, it's never been better.
I mean, in most ways, I think, you know, life has never been better. Mm-hmm. If you look at, the Steven Pinker thesis of the world. Mm-hmm. Like, just life expectancy, medicine, technology, all of the rest. In general, things are improving. But obviously, there have been massive political crises in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm. Like Brexit. Thanks for that.
I'm not saying it's bad, but it is a crisis.
Once a week, that's sick.
You know.
Do you think that Brexit has led to the rise of anti-Semitism, xenophobia, racism?
Well, yes,
all the things that are happening.
Yeah,
Jimmy, answer this question.
I think it's connected, but the causal kind of link is a bit difficult to say. I mean, you could say, are people becoming more xenophobic and racist, therefore they voted for Brexit, or is Brexit causing a rise in xenophobia and
racism?
Chicken
and egg.
I don't think it's either of those, actually. I think it emboldened the people who are still like homophobic, xenophobic and racist. Because I've told you this, like when I was with my ex-partner, after Brexit, all of a sudden we were getting abuse on the street every week. It was in London as well, which is crazy.
We got a marked increase in the amount of abuse. They made that said no more Polish vermin leave, like the day after the things was called. It's like that absolutely has been a rise of it. But something Aziz Ansari said that really interesting.
The American comedian.
Yeah, he said, like, I wish we could all go back and just ask the racists to continue pretending because they were doing such a good job.
Yeah.
I just love that because it's true. Like, yeah. It exists, but we all, we learn things. We socially learn how to respect each other and just don't be fucking racist. Like, you've got it inside of you and that's how you feel. You suppress that.
Yeah,
just keep it inside. It is bad.
Is it ever okay to joke about stuff like this? Because what he was saying is it's a joke and he apologized. But he was sort of like, nothing's off limits.
I think everything was fine to joke about, but I mean, I assume that you'd take the view that Jazza said joking normalises things in certain ways, and there has been this idea that if someone who's not anti-Semitic jokes about something, it means that somebody who is anti-Semitic feels a bit freer to do so.
Absolutely.
Which I do kind of buy, but it does. I don't know that how you can regulate something like that in a sensible way. I think it has to be kind of a free-for-all.
Yeah.
Just because I don't think you can write a legal framework around it that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah. It's more about people pushing the boundaries and checking the edges and PewDiePie crossed the line. Go back. No, what you did was too wrong. We're testing each other.
Do you think that the repercussions that he's having to go through are too much then, based on the fact that he just did a joke?
The shaming.
The huge amount of column inches that have been dedicated to him being called anti-Semitic and a Nazi in so much of the news media, which frankly I don't think is right, him losing out on preferential ad placement and losing his contract.
I think he's a difficult man to feel sorry for.
In what way? Just the money? Or?
Well, he's very successful. He's gonna be fine. This will blow over. Prince Harry wearing a Nazi uniform. It will blow over and it will change. And like as everything shifts, will change the conversation. Mm. Somebody new will be our victim. But yeah, I can't feel sorry for him really.
I think it's quite important to hold people accountable and. I always struggle with the balance between personal shaming and kind of destruction of people's personalities and what they've done and being able to hold people accountable, because I think it's quite a good thing that we've all gone, this is not okay. So people know that if you do shit like this, that's not okay.
Well, I wouldn't agree that it's not okay. I think people should be allowed to joke about these sort of things, and that will upset some people, inevitably. I mean, there's been a huge trend in comedy in recent years of somebody making a joke in like a club and then it being put on the internet or written about or whatever, and then there's a huge storm over it.
Have you read John Ronson's
So You've Been Publicly Shamed?
Yeah. So I think that whole book is just a big warning against
this sort of thing
where that's been happened, where something has been taken out of context, not meant for wider consumption. And I don't think that Pewds is going to end up... particularly harmed by this. Is probably going to only have 14 million by next year. I think that it's dangerous that it sets a precedent for other people who are pushing boundaries of comedy, as Ruby was saying. Because I think that when you take away that particular art form, I think that the rest of us suffer. Anyways.
Pewds.
Yeah. Shall we wrap up? Is there anything
Does anyone have anything further they want to say about Pewds?
Poods. Felix.
I had some stuff to say about kind of satire and comedy, but I don't think it's placed now. I think we've gone.
This isn't the time.
The whole Al Murray situ.
Yeah. Okay, can you just for like a few minutes then, what is the Al Murray situation?
So Al Murray's pub landlord is a character taking the piss out of racist Britain.
He ran against
Nigel Farage
last year, didn't he?
Loads of people don't get the satire of it and then
think he's real
and it's like the whole Saturday Night Live thing of Tina Fey, oh my god, what's her name, the lipstick pitbull,
Sarah Palin
lipstick
pitbull. Just all of the keywords.
She's much more palatable after that. lovely Tina Fey mm-hmm. has been taken, took the piss out of her. She came on Saturday Night Live with them. It's mm-hmm. like Carrie Enfield's character, loads of money, like in the 90s. Where are we now? Mm. We are all loads of money now. We are all, everyone's middle class now. Everyone's.
I don't think we are, Charlie.
No, but like, the way that people react to money, like that was a really distasteful character. Now we're living in this hugely capitalist world. Mm-hmm.
It's probably a bit harsh to pin that on Harry Enfield.
No, I'm not putting it on him, but he has said himself the piss take became uncomfortable. Malcolm Gladwell's got a really good podcast on it. Mm-hmm. You should all listen to it.
Cool.
So I mean,
I don't think this is going to make the final cut of this podcast.
I mean, your point though is that it's difficult to tell the difference between really good satire and the real thing, which is Poe's law.
Actually, work as a political tool.
No, of course
I don't think it does.
The guys who made Spitting Image with the puppets, say that after like 10, 15 years of making it, they don't think that they changed one decision or one vote that people made. They were just... And actually, the politicians ended up asking for them to have the piss taken out of them on Spitting Image because the politicians loved it so much.
Yeah.
It's difficult to measure influence, though. The fact that comedians don't think it's effective, that doesn't necessarily mean it isn't.
I can measure influence. socialblade.com.
And on that awful note, shall we wrap this up?
Thank you very much for joining us, ladies.
It's been an awful lot of fun.
No, it's fine. And where can they find you on the internet?
On Twitter.
They being you, dear listener. Listen up now. We're addressing you. Yes, dear listeners.
I like that you call them dear listeners. On Twitter at @das_podcast.
For the podcast itself and for the two of you.
Oh, for us personally.
Yeah. Why not?
I'm at Charlie Braids.
I'm at Rabina Pabani, but we're more put together.
We come as a pair.
And where can they find Das Podcast?
On iTunes, Das Podcast, on SoundCloud, Das Podcast, Podbean. On Podbean, Das Podcast.
Yeah. Beautiful, consistent branding.
It's not though, because on Instagram where this is Das,
So
but if you want
to
check out
the fact that you have an Instagram is very impressive though, to be completely honest.
Well, we're definitely going to Instagram picture of us there.
Oh, okay, cool.
We have a website though that's wearedas.com where we have all of our episodes, and obviously get in touch with us and debate with us because we like that too.
Disagree with us, please.
We always encourage contention here. Honestly though, guys, please do check out these wonderful women because they do fantastic content, and it's really lovelyly produced. Jimmy for the past like 2 weeks has genuinely just been falling over the audio quality of their podcast. You'll be able to enjoy that. You can also, of course, find us at Right Dishonour on Twitter, therightdishonourable.com. Rightdishonourable.com?
I think either works.
I think both work. Did we buy both? Who knows?
We'll
find out. Also, leave us a review on iTunes, please. Because it really helps. It really, really helps.
Like
thank you so
too.
Much.
That's
yeah, good. Five. Five stars.
Wow.
And you can find me at Jazza John and Jimmy at JDE Nichols.
You can.
Cool. That was it then.
Thank
you. Bye. We're so sorry that we've just clapped in your ears, listeners.
Fade it out for you. Lovely fade at the end.
I'm just going to take a selfie and ask for our Instagram.